Hello, good people. This is Will Small.
This is Nathan.
And this is Amy.
Well, today on the podcast, we have a very special guest. We have Amy Kelly-N. Is that how you say your last name?
It is. Yeah, you just got to clog up the throat.
Can you say it for us?
Amy Kelly-N. Yeah, so you just got to clog up the throat and make a noise. It's like, mm.
Awesome. Well, Amy, so good to have you on the podcast today. You are a part of our young adult community here at NVBC.
I am, yes.
Tell us more about you. Give us a snapshot of the life of Amy.
Okay, I'm a uni student. I live in Narara.
What are you studying?
I'm studying health science.
Health science?
Yes.
Ooh.
Mm.
And where does that lead a person?
It can lead depending on what you major in. So I'm majoring in anatomy and histology. And so you can do, you can become a doctor if you want to, but yeah, I don't know.
Do you want to? Or are you not sure?
I don't really know, so...
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
And what about you outside of uni? Tell us, you know, what else makes Amy, Amy?
I come to church. I'm a youth leader, so I do that on Friday nights. I do aerial silks, which I was going to talk about at What Are We Learning? Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Let's,
So, yeah, soon
let's put that, build a bit of anticipation. Do you know what that is, Nathan?
Yes.
Okay. I am alone in not knowing what that is. Today on Art of Conversation, we are going to talk about university study and spirituality. Mm. And we're going to ask some questions about what it looks like to have a faith when you're engaged in uni and it's one of the busiest times of your life. So we're going to talk about that a little bit later, but first we're going to do the usual. The three of us, myself, Nathan and Amy, we're going to drop some mad reviews and talk about things we're learning.
So I was going to review Lego, partly because we had some Lego event thing on at the church recently, but just reviewing Lego in general, not that event particularly. So Lego, you've probably heard of it before, little type of plastic brick item toys that click together to build things with. They're pretty good. You can build lots of different things. I like things like Star Wars Lego is always fun.
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
Spaceships and also building castles and...
Did you grow up as a big Lego guy?
I had a moderate amount of Lego growing up, so it was always good. So good things about Lego is Lego, the brand of Lego, they do such a better job at making the bricks than every other fake brand of plastic building blocks I've ever come across. All the other ones are terrible. I've used some over the years. They're all bad. Don't buy them.
What is their bad? Is they don't stick together as well. They're not as flush.
Yeah, they just don't. It's like you'd think it wouldn't be that hard to make plastic bricks that stick together, but they just don't work as well. They don't line up properly. They don't stick closely together.
Have you used much Lego, Amy?
I haven't actually. No.
Okay. Well, good. This review might help you decide whether you.
Yeah. I've always found the instructions pretty easy to follow if you want to follow the instructions, but it is also the type of toy that you can do whatever you want if that's the way that you're
so inclined. Not many people do that, hey. Well, maybe they do.
But you sort of do. You can do a bit of both, which is half of the fun of the Lego. One of the worst things is stepping on Lego if you don't have shoes on.
Oh, that is one of the worst things.
Especially at night.
Especially when it's cold.
You just step on a Lego and it's just like painful.
Yes.
You don't want to do that. Make sure you don't leave Lego lying around on a hard floor when you're going to be walking around with no shoes on. So that's my review of Lego. 4.5 out of 5 stars.
4.5 out of 5 so stars. You didn't say anything about the cost. I feel like...
Oh, it's ridiculously expensive.
Lego is expensive. What the heck? I feel like you're partly just paying for the brand.
Yeah.
Especially, I feel like sometimes it's like, oh, I just spent like $20 on a Lego kit and you get like 3 pieces of Lego. Yep. And you're like, why did I do this? The quality of the product is really good, but they definitely charge you for it.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, I wanted a Lego pirate ship so badly when I was a little kid. And I think my dad found a Lego pirate ship at a garage sale because there was no way that my parents could afford the Lego pirate ship. Mm. 6 kids, single income family, and Lego pirate ships cost like your 6 kids. You know, you can trade in 6 kids for a Lego pirate ship. But man, it has stood the test of time, hasn't it? Lego still going strong.
Yeah, it really has, hey.
Amy, what have you brought to review?
Well, I have a couple of things I can review. So the first one is a book.
Well, just hold on a second. Multiple reviews.
I know. Is that allowed? Yeah, I don't know.
You need to put in like a sound effect or something. I think it's allowed, but you have to be like quick.
Okay.
Spitfire reviews.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so the first one is a book and it's called The Art of Conversation, and I saw it in an op shop and I was like, oh wow, hey.
Someone wrote a book about this.
Yeah, and so I've only just started reading it, so I'm not very far through, but so far I kind of like it, so I don't know.
Is it fiction, nonfiction? Is it like teaching people how to talk?
Yeah, so it's kind of just like a review of conversations, I don't know.
Does it contain reviews and things that are being learnt and special guests?
No, it doesn't. It's not as cool as a podcast, I must say. But it's got like, I can read a
little. It's probably
bit.
More about the art of conversation than this podcast is.
Yeah, well, yeah, it kind of is.
It's got a great cover. I know the listeners really pretty. Can't hear it, but if you're a book judge,
it's by Catherine kind of Bliss. Person. So, yeah, it was only $2 from an op shop, so I was like, okay, let's
come
do it.
On.
Yeah, op shops are really good for books that are cheap. And so, okay, so that's a little bit. I'll read a little bit, and it says, respect the rules of artful conversation, and not only are you on your way to being a better person, but to steer discussion, to entertain, not dominate, and you're on the road to power. So, I don't know. I thought, yeah. So I was like, it's pretty cool. So
yeah. So we give things star ratings generally. You don't have to.
Okay.
You could review the star rating system and find that it falls short.
No. I've probably rated about a 3 out of 5 so far.
Okay. Okay. So, that's pretty good. Yeah. So if you're out there, you can read The Art of Conversation.
Or you could just listen to
Or you could just keep listening to Art of Conversation, the podcast.
Or do both.
Do both. Amy's doing both.
I am doing both, yeah. Okay, so my second one is electric blankets. I just really appreciate electric blankets.
Mm.
Like, they're really good. You know, it's cold and then you just get into your electric like your bed with your electric blanket.
They are lovely.
Yeah, so I don't know. Although I feel like they can be quite dangerous, like the older ones.
If you wet your bed.
Yeah. Or if you leave it on and then you wake up, like, in the morning and you just feel so dried out and you're just like, oh, my gosh. So I think my one kind of automatically goes to the lower one after a couple of hours. Yeah, so I probably rate that about a
Do you kind of do the whole turn your electric blanket on a certain amount of time before you get into bed?
I try, but
it's devastating if you forget, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, damn it. So I probably rate that a 4 out of 5. So just nice. Because they can be a bit dangerous. Like, there have been situations where they catch on fire, have they, I think?
Lots of things catch on fire.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
It's unpleasant to catch on fire when you're in bed, though. I mean, yeah. It's unpleasant to catch on fire anywhere, but of all the places...
In your safe zone.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want the bed to betray you.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's 2. Do you have any more?
I do, yeah. Growing your own food. So my dad grows his own food, not like just like some citrus and stuff. And I don't know, there's something cool about it. Then you're like, oh, we grew this lemon.
Yeah.
But it is kind of annoying that you have to like wait and water it and stuff.
Oh, so slow, right? Just industrial revolution.
I know, when you could just buy it from the supermarket. So, yeah.
Yes.
So what do you rate it, growing your own food?
Probably a 3.5 out of 5. I don't know, because once we had a Spanish melon, I don't know if you know what they are, they're really good. And we were like, oh, Dad, did you buy this? And he was like, no, we grew it. And we all just had so much respect. We were like, whoa. It just had so much more value.
I think homegrown food that someone else does is definitely the best type.
Yeah.
Yep. I agree. Have you, Amy, laid in your bed with your electric blanket on reading Art of Conversation while eating a Spanish melon?
I can't say that I have, but that's on the next.
What would you rate that experience?
Oh, it would be up there. If it was like a cold day, probably like a solid 4 out of 5, 5 out of 5. There are definitely better things that I could be doing.
Everything's contextual, hey, because if it was a summer day.
Yeah.
The
I don't think I'd want to be doing
way
that.
Down.
Yeah.
They should have like the opposite in summer, like an ice blanket, an electric cool down blanket. If you're in a sweaty hot bed in summer, it's pretty unpleasant, and there's not a lot you can do. You just kind of suffer through.
But are you the kind of person that in summer you don't sleep with any like sheet or anything? Are you just like
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I would probably enjoy the electric cold blanket. I changed my mind on what I'm going to review based on Amy's review just then. So you reviewed the electric blanket.
Mm-hmm.
And recently in my life, we got a duck down quilt. Basically, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened to my bed.
Wait, what is a duck down quilt?
Well, I guess it's a quilt with duck down in it.
Yeah. You know, it's got tiny, tiny duck feathers inside the quilt.
How many ducks worth of feathers does it have?
A few. It's a queen size. I don't know exactly how many ducks worth that is. You know, I grew up in Canberra, so I grew up in a cold place. And my bedroom growing up, you'd wake up in the morning and the quilt would be like turned to like ice and it would snap in half. So it was so cold. And, you know, you'd like open the curtain and the window is just like covered in condensation. And it was just freezing.
I couldn't live like that. I hate the cold.
I've lived through some cold times, and now living on the Central Coast, I know life is not anywhere near as cold. But the houses on the Central Coast don't generally have as good heating. So we had pretty good heating back in Canberra. And our house now, we don't have any form of heating in our bedroom at the moment, apart from the duck down quilt, and it nails it. When you get under this thing, you're under the duck down quilt for like a minute, and then suddenly you're the warmest, fluffiest, happiest person in the world. And it's super, like, the down kind of compresses, you know those puffy jackets, how they like you press it down and then it just slowly like comes out, it's all airy. It's kind of like, it's like a marshmallow. It's like sleeping under a marshmallow that's really warm.
That's the life. That's
so the thing that it has up on an electric blanket is a obviously, like you pointed out, there's some danger in the electricity of the electric blanket. B, this thing, no electricity is being used, so it is a very cost. It's expensive to get a duck down quilt, but once you've got it,
it's worth it. It's a
money saver. So I'm going to review having a down quilt as a 4.7 out of 5.
Wow, that's very specific.
I felt like last week I did a 4.5 and then Liesl Burden, she just like questioned it.
4.5.
She was like, what was the 0.5? I guess you could ask, what's the 0.3? But it's just, look, it's not perfect.
It's hard to get things that are perfect.
Well, it's hard when it's like between two numbers.
All right, well, let's talk about things that we're learning lately. You mentioned something before, Amy, that I had no idea what it was. Please, tell us.
Yeah, so I'm learning aerial silks. And it's where basically it's a long piece of fabric that hangs from like a tall ceiling. And then you climb up it and then you can do cool tricks in it and stuff.
What? That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty, it's actually very hard.
And it's like, called aerial silks.
Yes, aerial silks. I know, it sounds very like fancy.
Yeah.
Mm,
so. It's like a gymnastics.
Did you know about this, Nathan, because of Amy telling you previously to this, or you just knew about aerial silks?
Well, I know about it because my sister does aerial silks.
Ah.
Gotcha. So that's how I got into doing aerial silks.
Okay, so it's spreading.
It is. It's like a disease.
So where do you go to do aerial silks?
So they do it down at the Central Coast Stadium. The CCYC,
So you climb up a piece of silk, basically.
Yeah, you do. And then you can do some really cool stuff. Like, there's some girls there that can just do some crazy flips and stuff.
It's this would
really
be pretty muscle intensive.
Yeah, it is. It actually so is. Like, the first month, basically, you're just learning how to get stronger. Yeah.
Do you do it on like a mat or something? So that
they put mats down.
It'd be pretty brutal.
Yeah.
If you fell on like hard.
Yeah. Especially because some of the girls go really high. And so then it's like, if you fall, then you'd crack a couple of bones. Yeah.
Wow. Aerial silks, everybody.
Very cool.
Very cool.
It's exercise, but it's also fun. So it's just, it's a nice combination.
Are there competitions? Do people do this?
You know, yeah, like, there are.
Do you have any hopes and dreams?
No. Definitely just a hobby, but who knows? Maybe one day.
Recently, I've been listening to the Bible Project podcast. You may or may not have heard of the Bible Project before, but they make YouTube videos about the Bible. But so I've been listening to their podcast a little bit, and I've found it to be interesting. That's one thing I've been learning. One of the topics that they were looking at was the topic of the Day of the Lord. Sort of what they do in the podcast is go through all the times in the Bible that the Day of the Lord is mentioned and talk about what it means in that context and how it then connects together over the story of the whole Bible.
Yeah, those guys are good. I think they're very good at explaining things in easy to understand ways.
There's the PhD doctor guy that's obviously done a lot of theological study, and then there's the other guy who's probably a bit more of the creative half of the Bible Project. I guess the style of it is a learner and an expert talking to each other to some extent.
Yeah, cool.
So one guy will ask questions and the other guy will answer. So yeah, I've found them to be interesting.
That's cool. So you've been learning new things about the Bible in this experience.
I have been learning about the Bible and themes in the Bible. And
I've been learning recently about something called eschatology. Do you guys know what eschatology is?
No,
it's a study of end times, isn't it?
Study of the end times. So I've been studying eschatology at Bible College. I had an exam this morning, so I've just finished that course, which is good. My life's been very full lately, so I'll be happy to have a break from some study for a little bit. But eschatology is interesting because when you're studying the end times, you're studying something that hasn't happened yet. So you're studying what the Bible kind of speaks about, the vision and the picture presented in the Bible around the last things. And yeah, there's all kinds of different views that people have, and those are based on things that Jesus said. They're based on Paul's letters. If you're someone listening to this podcast who's not a part of churchianity, of church world, then, you know, you're probably like, what? Study of the end times? That sounds crazy. But it's something that the Bible talks about a lot. It's something that, you know, Christians have different views on and disagreements about. But it's fascinating. I found it really interesting. In particular, what I found interesting, and I guess my one little learning that I'll share, is there's all sorts of people, both way back in the day, like when the Bible was being written, when the New Testament was being written, and still people today who will say things like the resurrection of Jesus, that's really inspiring and interesting, but it can't have been an actual bodily resurrection. Like, it's just symbolic, it's just spiritual. And this view kind of reflects something called Gnosticism. And Gnosticism is like a view that, you know, we have a spirit or a soul, and that is good and immortal and, you know, like of real value. But the physical, the body, the world, the material stuff is like less valuable. It's flawed. It's weak. You know, the body gets sick. The earth breaks down. Gnosticism kind of values the soul above the body. But Christianity, like if you read the Bible throughout the whole thing, Christianity is really into the physical. God made the physical world and really said that it was good, and it was only afterwards that sin kind of came in and started to ruin things and brought about death. And when Jesus comes in the Bible, Jesus comes in a physical body, and he comes and he eats food and he heals real people and he lives kind of a very human physical life. And then his resurrection is absolutely about the restoration of how the body was intended to be, you know, a body that lasts, a body that doesn't die, a body that actually the new resurrected thing is born out of the old thing. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff we could talk about there, but eschatology, very interesting. If you're interested, look it up, read some different theories. It's all sorts of crazy stuff you'll find. But for me, you know, the whole Jesus message is actually about Jesus has already begun when he came. He commenced the kingdom of God on earth. And so in some ways, we're living in the beginning of this beautiful thing, and it's only going to get better when he comes back and fulfills this kind of kingdom of God on earth. And not everyone's going to want to be a part of that. Some people, you know, are gonna reject that, and then people have different views about what that means, but we'll save that conversation for another time.
So you don't have an opinion on the exact date of the end of the world then?
Well, I thought it was 2012, and then
disappointed,
and then I was disappointed. Not really. I think we should definitely talk about this stuff on a future episode. It's super interesting, you know, like all that kind of end times stuff and the views people have about the earth. And, you know, there's always somebody like kind of trying to freak everyone out. Oh, the end of the world is near. But I think, you know, like it seems to me like God is so committed to restoring and reconciling things that he wants us to be a part of restoring and reconciling this world and not just waiting for it to kind of disappear. The Bible talks about a new heavens and a new earth. But I kind of think about that as the new is coming out of the old, in the same way that when we have a life in Jesus, you know, we begin to talk about a new life in Christ, even though you, having your new life in Christ, are still in your same old body. So the Bible does talk about, you know, a new resurrected body, but I think that there's going to be a lot of continuity between our life now, between what we do now and the future. And I guess that's, you know, part of the message of the Bible and eschatology is that what you do now matters for a long time, for eternity. Like it matters the way that you...
I guess it's the idea of God's not just in a mission of getting rid of the old thing that was broken and put something new in place, but actually his mission is to restore the old thing to be what it should be.
Yeah, totally. There's this, you know, this verse in the book of Isaiah where it talks about in the future the swords will be beaten into plowshares. It's like this image of, you know, something that's metal has been used for war, but then it can be used to like grow food and plow the ground. I love images like that. There are like charities and things that, you know, will take old pieces of shrapnel and like bullets from places around the world and turn them into like, you know, art and jewelry. And I think that that's, to me, that's a bit how God is. He takes the broken things,
yeah, totally.
Doesn't waste them, but turns them into something new and beautiful that they were never intended for when they were created as something destructive. So on that note, in the room right now, we have a current uni student.
Mm-hmm.
We have someone who's, you know, Nathan, you did uni a few years ago. You started uni when you were quite young. Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, Nathan, you have a degree.
I have a degree. I am a former uni student.
And what is your degree?
A Bachelor of Advanced Science major in software technology.
Nice. Sounds pretty legit. I have a degree. I have an honours degree in English literature and philosophy. And I am currently, I've gone back to study doing Bible college kind of theology and ministry stuff. What I'm doing is called a graduate diploma of divinity. So I like to joke about how I'm just, you know, learning to be a little bit more divine.
Love it.
But, you know, we all have an experience of study and of uni, and uni is, for me, a fascinating time. On the one hand, you're learning all these things about yourself and the world and what you're studying, and you're asking bigger questions and you're starting to grow up and the world's becoming more complicated. And at the same time, you're losing your sleep and your social life and your ability to have time to think and ponder on all of those things you're learning. And sort of this weird mix of like, can be this mix of like crazy busy and social and trying to figure things out and, you know, beginnings of significant relationships. And what does it look like to have a faith in the middle of all of that? You know, what does it look like to be a follower of Jesus in that season of your life? There's a million questions which branch off that one, but we're just going to start with Amy. For you, does your faith have anything to do with what you're studying and the way that you study it?
I feel like some people will definitely go and be like, I feel like God's calling me to do this. And I feel like I didn't necessarily feel that. I guess I kind of didn't really know what I wanted to study. And so this degree is super broad. And so I think going into this degree, I was kind of like, I don't really know what I exactly want to do, but I'm open for God to direct me in what I want to do. I didn't know what I wanted to exactly do. And so I was kind of like, oh, I'll go into a really broad degree. And then, because I don't want to just jump into a very specialized degree and then decide that I hate it and I don't feel like God's calling me to be there. And so I kind of was like, oh, I'll go into a broad degree and then see what happens. And so I still don't know where I am going to end up, but hopefully I'm kind of aiming that God will kind of direct me.
You're aiming?
I'm aiming, yeah.
So, you know, I find it interesting, and that's a huge thing, this concept of, like, God calling us. You know, calling comes out of this word vocation, which seems more normal. People are more used to vocation. Calling sounds a bit like more higher level. But, you know, that's one way to think through what you're studying and your faith. But, you know, when it comes to actually what you're studying day in, day out, do you see, are you learning about God in that process in terms of health and science? Like, do you see that as a place where you learn about how God's made things? And
yeah, well, even just understanding, so yeah, I'm studying a lot about the body, and so I just kind of throughout all the tiny little details of our body, like every little enzyme has such a specific action and stuff, I think through that I'm kind of like, wow, everything is so incredibly complex within our lives that I'm just like, wow, I can't believe that people can't believe in a God. Like, I just, yeah, I think that the complexity of everything and particularly the body, I'm kind of like, yeah, wow. Yeah, it is cool.
And health, like health is one of the things Jesus did was to heal people. And the body has this amazing capacity for self-healing often and the way that God's made things. But, you know, I think that even in studying what it means for people to be healthy and how that happens, there's surely the heart of God in some of that.
Yeah.
In totally. A lot of that. All of that, probably.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Interesting. Nathan, did you feel like your faith related to what you studied at university?
I feel like that's just a very loaded question anyway. The assumption is yes. I think an interesting thing to think about when it comes to studying at university, and I think in general as well, I don't think university is necessarily completely unique in every sense. The question I ask is like, why study anything at all? And a lot of what you study potentially isn't actually going to be super useful to you in your day-to-day life. I actually think that there is value in studying as sort of like an end of itself, in the discovering things about the way that God has created the world, and that that is part of living life for God, in the same way that people might paint pictures or create music as an expression of their relationship with God. I think that studying and using the capacity of your mind to learn and further knowledge is also a way that we can honor God, whatever word you feel like using in that way. Even if you're studying things that seem not directly relevant to getting a job, that there's actually, that life is not just about getting jobs.
Yeah. I think it's John Lennox. He's a mathematician, but a bit of a philosopher and a speaker as well. And he talks about, you know, the very fact that the universe, that we believe it is intelligible, that it can be studied, that what we study, we're not just being somehow deceived, that like we can, you know, find truth. Like that actually teaches us about the rationality of the universe and about the creative, you know, the God behind it. If you don't have a picture of God, then it kind of doesn't make sense that our study would actually lead us to further understanding, because why would things have that kind of rationality and intelligibility if there's not an intelligent mind behind it all? Some interesting stuff. But I totally agree with you that study in and of itself is a worthy end rather than just a means. And so often, and this is what's hard, you know, I talk to a bunch of uni students who you get so focused on, I just got to get through this round of assessments. I just got to get the piece of paper. I just got to get to the degree. But you often miss the space to actually reflect on the real things you're learning in the midst of it. Yeah. Do you feel like that sometimes, Amy? Like,
yeah, definitely.
And that's part of the, you know, and I don't think it's a bad thing having exams and deadlines. Like that kind of does force you to do the stuff, but it can also mean that you end up just hitting the Red Bulls and having lots of late nights and actually, you know, you're not in the best space to be learning when you're kind of, you know, like almost abusing your body to get to the end of the semester. For me, I studied, you know, English and philosophy, a Bachelor of Arts, which kind of feels super useless. And I often joke about how it's, most useless degree you can do. But for me, what I learned was actually not really just about specific philosophers or about, you know, books written by certain people. It wasn't just about authors or literature. My degree was really about teaching me how to view everything through a more critical kind of lens.
That's cool.
And so I think that's really what's lasted, is not so much knowledge about certain books or knowledge about certain, you know, Heidegger and Kant and different philosophers. What's lasted for me is actually when I look at anything, whether it's the Bible or a movie or kind of a decision in my life or a decision in the workplace, kind of always asking certain critical questions and trying to just look at things, you know, from multiple perspectives. So I think in that sense, you know, university study was super good at just helping to expand the way that I viewed everyday life. But I did struggle, and this is kind of one of the things I guess we're talking about, I did struggle with what does it mean to be a person who's pursuing, you know, spirituality, in my case, you know, following Jesus. So you might be listening to this, you might be a Christian or you might be from another faith, but so often spirituality is about disciplines and it's about rhythms and it's about praying or reading the Bible or being in community. And yet those things can be very difficult to balance with the kind of crazy rhythm of uni. Sort of seems like half the year is like super intense and busy and half of it is like you're on holidays eating watermelon in your electric blanket, not a watermelon, Spanish melon. What does it look like to engage in that part of your faith? What did it look like for you, Nathan, or what does it look like for you, Amy, now to maintain connection to Christian community and good practices? And
I think one of the things that people find most difficult about uni sometimes is just time management.
Yeah, totally.
Being able to make a decision about what you think is important and actually committing to spending that time on those things.
That's very wise. Time management.
And I think
they should teach a course on that at uni.
I'm sure they do.
First semester.
Yeah. Well, the thing with time management is most of the concepts in time management are actually pretty obvious, in that you should organize your time and make decisions about it. The difficulty is in actually doing it.
Yes.
And it is difficult because we live in a world that is sort of stacked against us when it comes to time management. There's always things that you can do to procrastinate. Technology has enabled effectively infinite procrastination and entertainment at a moment's notice.
Yeah, that's very wise.
Because that aspect of time management is hard in our day and age because there's so much to distract us.
I think part of what I struggle with in that whole, you know, kind of world at uni was, as a full-time uni student, there's kind of this expectation from the university that you're going to be studying, even if you only have, I had like 8 hours of class a week as an arts student. You know, maybe sometimes 12. But like this expectation that you're spending, you know, 40 hours a week studying.
Yeah,
but
for me, pressure.
I had to fit in. And most people these days, you know, you've got a part-time job. And I was living outside of home. I had to pay rent while I was studying. So I had to work enough to kind of meet my needs. It's funny because now across a couple of different contexts, I have a full-time workload and a part-time study load, where I used to have a full-time study load and a part-time workload. But in either one of those situations, it's hard to really prioritize. And I think what Nathan was saying, you know, to choose the things that are the first things and the non-negotiable things. For me, one of the big things, if I could go back to uni, something that I would do that I didn't do when I was in uni, which I do now, is to really strictly have a practice of Sabbath. Mm. Sounds like a very old school kind of concept, but really it's just about recognizing that you're not a machine and you can't do intellectually engaging things 7 days a week. You can't do work every day. So now, even though I'm, you know, quite busy, I have a real practice of one day a week where no matter how many things are demanding my attention, I have a practice of saying no. I kind of wish I could go back to my university self and set up that habit. I think at the time I would have just gone, there's no way I could do that. But I think actually doing it is kind of the way to do things sustainably and to soak in the learning. You know, when you come up and you actually give yourself space to breathe, that's when a lot of the things you've been learning kind of actually simmer and sink in and go beyond the surface level. Do you have any like survival tactics, Amy? What's your experience of uni and busyness and, you know, healthy rhythms been like?
I find it hard. I definitely do find it hard. I find even just like reading the Bible on the train trip, I feel like small little things like that are cool. But yeah, I definitely think that in terms of prioritizing your time is the most important. So like I do a lot of ministry within the church and I kind of prioritize that. So like on a Friday night, I'll be like, no, I'm not going to commit to doing, you know, uni work. Like I've set that time apart being like, okay, well, I'm a youth leader. So that time is just time that I'm serving in youth. And so, yeah.
And you're able to do that, right? Because you set the time apart, then you make things work around it. Whereas if it was a kind of, I'll decide each Friday as I get to that Friday.
Yeah. It's definitely being committed to stuff. Yeah.
Premeditated decision.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting how if you've already decided I'm going to do this thing and that's in your calendar, normally you end up having enough time to get the study done anyway. But if you had it, if you were like, oh, I'll see how I'm going with study at the time.
Then you procrastinate up
until you probably would not, you'd end up with not enough time and you wouldn't go to the thing, even though you had the same amount of time.
Yeah, somehow
sometimes
calendar blockings and deadlines and all those kind of things make a huge difference. I also have a little personal rule with my study that if I've got an essay due, my deadline is a day before the deadline.
Oh, so that never works for me.
Yeah, I know some people like this, it seems like pretty unrealistic. But it helps just because then you if you're like running late, you can get it in on the day, hopefully, kind of is the idea.
Yeah.
The other thing I you know, for me, like I think back to uni and I was very involved at the church that I was at. I was involved in kind of senior youth leadership stuff and I was involved in some youth like juvenile detention ministry stuff. But I had this real, then I kind of went, at uni there's like Christian groups and there's like, you know, these kind of groups on campus that are trying to like, you know, bring that kind of faith aspect into that space. But for me, it was often easiest just to go, you know what, I do this ministry stuff outside of that space and I just don't have any more time or capacity to get involved with what's going on at uni. And I kind of think it's a bit of a false dichotomy, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think you should be forced into, well, either I don't bring my faith to uni and I'm really involved outside of it, or I bring my faith to uni by being in the Christian group. And some people, you know, have really positive experiences. I've got friends who came to faith through Christian groups at uni, so I totally support that kind of thing.
Did you ever join the Christian groups at uni?
No, I didn't. And that was, I kind of always just felt like I had too much stuff going on outside of uni to really have much time. And I guess maybe in some ways I wish I could have had the experience of having more time at uni to just be at uni. For me, it was always kind of a fly in, fly out, get what I needed to do.
And did you live very far away from the uni?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
Which I think makes a difference. I think your experience would be totally different if you lived on campus or that kind of thing.
I think especially on the Central Coast, so in my experience, living on the Central Coast, you're effectively commuting a decent distance to uni. So that affects you a lot in you don't want to be at uni all that much. Although I do know people who go to uni and are there all day, almost every day, because they're involved in groups and they've got classes on and they'll be at uni even when they don't have classes on. Whereas for me, my experience was go to classes and they come home.
Yeah, that's kind of similar to
what and I think that is similar to a lot of people especially on the Central Coast.
Yeah.
If you're commuting.
Yeah, yeah. I think the uni experience is totally different. Like, I'm now doing study completely online, and that feels very isolated. And it feels like I've got to talk about what I'm learning on this podcast so that I'm telling somebody about what I'm learning. You know, I miss sometimes the experience of actually being in the room with other people studying the same stuff. I think the other thing I did like at uni, though, was the uni I went to had a beautiful campus. And a lot of unis, I think, are designed to be, you know, places of beauty and of kind of good design, which I always felt like helped me as well, just in terms of I wanted to be at uni because it felt like a place that was open to study, a place that was well taken care of, a place that had kind of creativity in its very physical kind of environment, which probably helped me to want to sit under a tree, read some books, and then actually think about God who made the tree that I was sitting under, and to try and find spaces at uni to kind of process and pray through what I was learning. Yeah. I think the big thing is there's no one size fits all. And, you know, some people will study online and some people will be at uni and some people full-time, part-time, and some people will get engaged with the Christian groups on site, and some people will, like, I, you know, feel like you don't have time for that. There's one guy at my uni who almost every day he just stood in the center of the uni and just read from his Bible aloud. I don't really know. You know, I felt kind of, I had mixed feelings about that. I think some people were like, man, this is crazy. You know, he was a cool guy. And I guess for him, that was like his real heart. You know, he just wanted to spread the news of Jesus real publicly. So you have to work it out for you, what it looks like to integrate your faith with your study. But, you know, you're one person and you don't leave what you believe at the door when you step into a classroom. So the real question is, how do you become a person of integrity, whether you're serving on a Friday night at youth, or you're on the train, or you're in class, or you're doing a course online. You got to figure out what that looks like in your context.
Studying at uni, I find the biggest difference from work is that it can effectively take up an infinite amount of time. You're never really quite done. So with work, often you've got your hours and you're sort of working for those hours. And then when you're not at work, you can disassociate. Broadly speaking, depending on what job you're doing. If you're a pastor or something, then too bad, you don't really have a life anyway. but so that means that you can always do more study. So when you're not studying and you're doing something that might just be fun or whatever, you always have that in the back of your mind. Oh,
yeah.
I should be studying. But the thing that I think I find annoying sometimes when people do is when people use studying as an excuse for not doing something. They're just kind of using it as an excuse because they didn't really want to do the thing and they don't want to be honest about that they don't want to do that thing. So they'll kind of be like, oh, I don't have time, I'm studying. And then they'll go off and do something else because they actually just didn't want to do that thing. Using studying as an excuse not for doing things that are good. So they might be like, oh yeah, doing whatever that thing would be a good thing to do, but I can't do it because I've got studying to do. And when actually their intention is actually that they're not going to end up studying.
They're just going to watch YouTube videos, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, and like, so yes, you do need to set time apart for studying, because sometimes there'll be things that you could be doing in your life that it's like, there'd be good things to do. You agree that they're good things, but maybe a lot of the time in the moment, you don't really feel like doing them.
Mm.
So study is this brilliant excuse to not have to do those things. And you can feel sort of good in yourself, when actually it just means that you're going to spend time doing something else. You don't end up really using the time.
It feels kind of like at uni, all the boundaries in your life become very loose. And I think having some clear boundaries are really important. But if all your boundaries are loose, your hours of sleep will just vary depending on, you know, whatever assignment's due. Like you said, that study can kind of, it's like never ending. You never finish your uni readings. And so all of your, like, you know, if you don't have clear boundaries, like, well, I don't study past, you know, a certain time at night, or I don't study on certain days of the week, or I do go to, you know, church, for example, or I study my Bible. Like, the crazy thing about uni is it shows you have an enormous capacity to study, but then so many uni students struggle with things like reading the Bible. And I don't mean that in a condemning way, because, you know, that was something I struggled with. But I look back and I go, man, I was able to read a whole bunch of stuff. Surely I could have swapped out some of that reading time to read, you know, books that I consider to be sacred and transformative and character building. So
I think with time management as well, sometimes I think is that a lot of the time we get really concerned about the number of hours of time we spend doing something. But for a lot of things, especially things that require mental capacity, the amount of raw hours almost is meaningless. What's actually important is being in the being focused and in the right state of mind to get as much done as possible. And it's definitely hard to force a particular state of mind on yourself. So sometimes it is about being really intentional, just forcing yourself to try and get stuff done, and you don't get stuff done because you can't force a state of mind very easily. But then you can do things that might not seem immediately related to your study that will actually help your study in the long run. So things like doing some form of exercise. Can actually
doing aerial silks.
You might find it to be some, it's like, oh, I don't have time to spend a couple hours a week doing some sport or exercise or something. But doing that thing will make the time that you spend studying so much better.
It's true.
Yeah.
And so even if you cut down 3 hours a week of time spent studying, you'll gain so much because it wasn't about the 3 hours. It was about the time that you do spend being effective.
There is freedom in the right limitations. Amy, would you like to share your final words of wisdom for any uni students, what you're learning in the journey, what you want to tell the world?
Definitely just prioritize your time. I think we've already kind of talked about that. Yeah, like you were saying that like you feel like you don't necessarily have time to read the Bible, but yeah, if you just kind of tell yourself, you know, each morning or like, I don't know, even if it's just like 3 days a week, if you're like, yeah, I'm going to commit to at this time read my Bible. And I think that through that, it was kind of like I don't know if you guys have ever seen the demonstration done with like the big rocks and then the smaller rocks and the sand.
I love that thing.
Yeah. Such and so I think that could kind of be applied here, where it's kind of like if you put your
Can you explain that for anyone who hasn't?
So the big rocks are kind of like demonstrate the priorities in your life, I guess.
So they're in like a jar or a bucket?
Yeah, so if you have a jar and then if you put the big rocks in first, so say for some people that might be uni work, or for some people that might be, you know, dedicating time to read your Bible or investing in ministries. And then from that, if you then put those in first before you put in your smaller priorities, like, you know, hanging out with friends or, I don't know, going on social media, then if you put those smaller rocks in, then they'll fit better. And then the sand can be like your, you know, minuscule everyday activity. So if you prioritize your bigger things that you want to get out of life,
put them in the jar
and
first.
Put them in the jar first, yeah, then everything else will kind of fit around that. And so then it just, it makes it work. So
otherwise you fill the jar with sand.
Yeah, then your bigger rocks don't
are like
fit.
You're trying to shove them in there and it's impossible. So.
So I think you kind of have to have that kind of mindset.
Yeah, put first things in first and let other things fit around them.
Yeah.
Nathan, what would you say to your past uni student self?
My probably takeaway point is that always remember when you're studying that studying is part of how we can be a part of God's kingdom in this world, and that learning is a good thing to be doing and a goal for itself. People get too caught up in what's the result of this that they actually lose all of the goodness that can come from it.
That's good. I agree with that. Yeah, my last little bit of thought is that when you're studying, particularly at uni, it's a really formational time in your life, and it's about forming the future. You know, what you're studying often is a part of forming what I'm going to do for a career. But, you know, you're also forming habits and you're forming ways of thinking that are going to stay with you beyond uni. So it's really important during those times, you know, to make some of your formation around how you have good rhythms in your life. And if you believe that the God stuff is important, then it's important today, not just in a couple of years after you graduate. So, you know, view uni and study in general as a part of formation, and view formation as what do you want your whole life to look like. And obviously there are seasons in uni where times get busy and crazy and you have to do, you know, that sort of late night study and stuff. But you want to make sure that that's the exception rather than the rule, and still, you know, in that be learning how to set yourself up for the busy times that are going to come at you in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. Yeah, so it's about whole of life formation, and that doesn't stop. I am still a student both at Bible College and of life. And to finish, you know, like the word disciple, like if you're someone who's following Jesus, a disciple is a learner who's learning a discipline. And just like Amy at uni right now, you're learning disciplines of health science. What does it look like to learn the disciplines of living like Jesus? So leave you with that. Until next time, Amy, Kelly, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.